This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest. Match review podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest review show. I am Chris Hambling and I'm your host as we look back at a scrappy 0-0 draw with annoying Wasp-based imbeciles Watford. Plenty to discuss and we'll be looking back at the game and reviewing some of your comments and questions too. I'll introduce you to the panel in just a moment.
Reviews, predictions, comments and rants. Send us your voice clips on WhatsApp 0203 575 1266.
Right, on the panel tonight we have, first up, Si Pizzy. Hello, Si.
Hello, how you doing? You all right?
I'm marvellous, absolutely marvellous. Been a while. What have you been up to?
Just running, mainly. Running. I've been doing a lot of running. I'm training for an ultramarathon now next year. So double ultramarathons, that's two 35-mile runs over 2 days. So I'm just doing lots of running, which is good, which is cool.
That seems insane. But you know, hey, it's you know, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
I still think it'd be easier than what we did on the marathon walk. That was incredibly difficult. Genuinely the hardest thing I've done, actually. So
which is weird, isn't it? Because I definitely couldn't envisage trying to run a marathon, or let alone an ultramarathon, let alone two ultramarathons. But there you go. I suppose mind over matter and all that, but I would definitely drop down dead. Talking to people who would drop down dead running a marathon. Hi, Chris, how you doing?
Not contemplating a super marathon. I'm all right. I've recovered.
Oh, you've called it a super marathon there. Is that different to an ultra marathon? Let's check with Si. Si, is there such a thing as a super marathon?
Not as yet, but I think Chris has just created it, so you should definitely sort of trademark that.
Right, Chris, let's work it out.
If it's a half marathon.
That's the opposite of super, isn't it? Let's kind of get this nailed down. What constitutes a super marathon? What additional things to running the relevant distance could there be?
Drink beer while you're doing it.
There you go. That is enough. That's all we need. So
yeah.
A can in each hand, do you think? Or perhaps one of those hats that allows you to drink cans through a straw.
Oh yeah, the ones with the straw. I think the straw should be allowed.
All right, good, good. Well, that is now officially trademarked on this podcast, and we'll be sorting one of those out soon. Join us for it, Mike. How are you doing?
Well, I did a super marathon yesterday between the shithole that's Vicarage Road and the shithole that's Watford Junction. So yeah, did that with a couple of cans in hand. Been there, done it. Got a t-shirt, mate.
I did think that you and Clarkie going to that the general area around Watford, around Vicarage Road, would be somewhat devoid of cans by the time you two had finished. But
you need it around there. I mean, if anyone's teetotal around there, kill themselves.
Well, I think that general theme about bad mouth in Watford will continue throughout the course of the show. Obviously, there wasn't a huge amount to talk about in terms of action in the match itself. A really scrappy game, really got a bit feisty at times, but there was very little quality on show from either side, if we're completely honest. Statistically, Watford did a lot more going forward than we did, and we'll be talking about the reasons for that. This week, I'm afraid no WhatsApp clips due to poor organisation our end.
However, we have got plenty of contact from Facebook and from Twitter as well. If you're not on any of those, do remember you can email us, hi@backofthenest.com. And of course, if in future weeks, if you want to give us a WhatsApp audio message, it's 0203 575 1266. And our regular weekly beg for you to, whatever podcast app you happen to be using and listening to us on, please use the facility on there to rate us as highly as possible, preferably 5 stars. And that allows us to, well, allows you to direct other people our way and grow our audience, which is obviously what we want to do and why we do this kind of thing. So anyway, we'll get straight into this. No, not really sure exactly how long this show is going to be, given the, the limited amount we have to talk about. But there are a few things that have got people worked up, myself definitely included. So the first topic, we just want to talk about what the hell is wrong with Watford. What is their problem? And to kind of start it off in terms of the tone, we got a tweet from Leif Anderson's Forehead, which is obviously a magnificent name on Twitter. And it says, horrible club Watford on and off the pitch. To top it off, there was no beer in the away end. And for that alone, they deserve relegation. And I think probably, Mike, I'm going to bring you straight in there. No beer.
Yeah, I think Watford have got a serious problem with Palace. As far as I know, it's just us, possibly one other side, that they don't put beer in the away end for. So, you know, it shows, even if most of us don't really have a second thought about Watford, they really do hate us. And it annoyed people in there yesterday, but because we'd been sitting around in Watford, everyone had already been drinking because they had to deal with the fact that they're in Watford. So,
I mean, even Brighton give us beer when we go and play there, and they give us good beer as well. I mean, to be fair, they don't give it to us; they sell it to us. But they make beer available, and Watford don't. The fact they don't, as I mean, I think that tweet is absolutely bang on gold standard. So yeah, well said, Leif Anderson's Forehead, for that. They should be relegated. I really look forward to that happening. I so hope it does. I'll love it if we relegate them.
The vindictiveness of not serving beer was just a reflection of the vindictiveness on the pitch, the vindictiveness of the fans, the whole thing. Vindictive is the word.
Absolutely right. Si, as a general point, we know, how do you view Watford?
I just absolutely hate them. I mean, you know, I was thinking about this, and I think someone we put a tweet out or a Facebook post saying, actually, you know, Watford are becoming a much more stronger rivalry for us than in many ways Brighton have been over many years. And actually, when I think of Brighton, other than pity, I don't genuinely feel sort of hatred. But Watford, ever since that annoying playoff semi-final with Adi Boothroyd and those only one time we used clappers at Selhurst Park, it was just I've hated them ever since. That vile. And I can't think of enough stronger words, really. Just absolutely hate them.
It's amazing that they change managers so often, yet the identity of that team doesn't seem to alter at all. And it's you know, obviously, I'm talking about on the pitch. And off the pitch, their fans just have a real chip on their shoulder when it comes to Palace. But, you know, on the flip side, I know a Watford fan, I work with him, and he was talking about the fact that they just never get to play their proper rivals, which is Luton. Won't be for much longer. I'm sure they'll be playing them very, very soon. But he made the point that, you know, he's got I think his daughter's about 24, 25, and she's never seen them play Luton, yet still hates Luton. So they have their own sort of identity issues there. And I suppose, you know, going back to the time when we didn't play Brighton for a while, you know, people really did focus on the Millwall rivalry and you know, Charlton popped their head up and all that kind of stuff. But I think what really sums them up a little bit is the abuse that Zaha gets. And, you know, Chris, Mike, you were there and you would have heard it firsthand, but it was loud and clear, those of us watching at home. And I think one thing that was really picked up very, very early on was they never back their own team with that level of commitment and that level of ferocity. And if they did, they'd actually have a really good atmosphere there at Vicarage Road. I mean, obviously, it'd be very hard to raise your spirits when you do support Watford, but it shows they've got it in them. And if you've got a whole stand that's actually united in hatred against one individual for what is basically no reason, he's never dived against them, you know, I've tried to talk to the guy I know and find out why they hate him. And, he just can't really point to a specific incident with any real justification. Obviously, they go back to the playoff final where Wilfried Zaha won the penalty, but no logical person looking at that could say anything other than it was a clear foul, because it was a clear foul. So it's a really bizarre situation that they hate him that much and they really want to get to him. And it's not, as we say, it's not just the fans show that. You know, everybody on that pitch was taking turns and kicking him and giving him a real hard time, and it was just awful to watch.
It was a very weird atmosphere. Almost silent at times, other than the away fans. And it ramped up a bit towards the end. I mean, in fairness to them, they've probably had very, very little to cheer about. You think of us last year, and with our home performances, it's not surprising that things went a bit quieter. You know, they were very happy to get a point yesterday, and there was plenty of mouthy tweets afterwards from Watford fans, including a couple of famous ones, you know, saying, oh, Kiko's got Zaha in his pocket and all that kind of thing. Well, you know, you're really feeding off scraps if a 0-0 draw is something to be posting that kind of thing about. But it was dead silent until this kind of vitriolic thing came through. But it could be just because they literally have nothing else, you know, nothing positive to go on, really.
But he would, you know, and the ironic thing is, if he was for some turn of events to end up playing for them, he'd walk into that team and they'd love him. So it is pretty petty. But there was loads of them found on Twitter saying that De La Feu is 10 times better player than Zaha is. And I was so tempted to start replying and sort of just randomly attacking loads of Watford fans, but I held myself back. I mean, genuinely, their hatred for Wilfred is just beyond understandable, really, because it can't just be about that penalty. I think genuinely it's because they've got nowhere near decent players in comparison to him and their team, and it probably is a bit of jealousy, I think.
Well, definitely, and you can say that, you know, a lot of the better players in the league will get that kind of treatment, and it very rarely works out well. Look, we dish out that kind of treatment to other clubs, better players at times as well. You know, the Vardy thing in recent memory springs to mind, but with Watford, it's just weird. I mean, De La Feu is a good player, you know, and I think, you know, I love him at our club. I think he is that good at times, but he's so inconsistent. You could never really look at him and say that he's a better performer than Wilfried Zaha. But, you know, you go back a while. I remember when Brighton were talking about how Will Buckley was better than Zaha. You know, remember Will Buckley? And it's that kind of thing. You do get that level of bias with you know, the players who play for the club you support and all that kind of stuff. But it's nonsensical. Andy Hode got in touch. Great Twitter handle there, Andy the Twat 1992. Superb stuff. And he's pointed out the fact that Watford's only game plan is to rattle Wilf and not actually attempt to play football. It's kind of a good way of summing it up. But, you know, I think that level of focus in a game, and it did ruin the game in a lot of ways, that, you know, obviously it's a sensible thing to do from their perspective to actually try and rattle our best player. And we did try and play as much as we could through Wilf. And you understand that because he's been in good form. Particularly over the last few games. So absolutely understandable, but it's particularly nasty. And I'm not going to moan about it and talk about it being unfair or anything like that. It's part of the game, and you don't want to end up, you know, just coming across as a complete whinger like Troy Deeney, for example, after the match. But, you know, definitely disappointing.
It does bring up something for me that worries me a little bit. Is it seems like over the last couple of years, we've probably, dating back to that Huddersfield opening game defeat in the De Boer era, we still haven't quite managed to see away teams that just decide they're going to go with shithousery for 90 minutes. And the worry is, you know, Brighton Monday week, they're going to do exactly the same thing. And I wonder if we still haven't learned our lesson for just dealing with these less decent sides that think that they're just going to kick the shit out of everyone.
Well, it's a really good point. And, you know, not going too far ahead or doing the preview team's job for them, which is, I think, you this week, Mike. But obviously, we've seen under Roy that the games where we've played Brighton, we've not been really at it. And you have to be absolutely at it from the first minute. And we can be very passive. And we do like to start games just trying to get a measure of our opposition, trying to restrict their chances, stop them playing a little bit and kind of work our way into the game. And we'll talk about the reasons why perhaps that didn't manage to work our way into this particular game a little bit later on. But yeah, I totally get where you're coming from, Mike. It's you know, already something in the back of my mind. But yeah, fingers crossed, a little bit more rest between games, and we'll give a good account of ourselves, I hope. So, I mean, obviously, one of the other things we saw from Watford, and again, this seems to go beyond whoever happens to be the manager. It was ex-Palace player Hayden Mullins in this particular game, with the psychotic Nigel Pearson watching on in the background. And they were just constantly in Martin Atkinson's ear. And we will talk about Martin Atkinson in just a moment, in our next kind of topic. But that, I mean, that started to get to me as well, because you want a referee to be strong in those situations, but he really wasn't. And one of the people, as expected, who did the most of that was Troy Deeney. Absolutely horrible, horrible player. And I don't even know if I'd love him in our side. A lot, you know, as we sort of said with Wilf, as Si was saying earlier on, you know, maybe he's the type of player that if he's playing for you with that level of commitment, that you'd love him. But I really just don't see how he's allowed to sort of stroll around the pitch like he's some top footballer. When he's just, there's not really much to him, is there? You know, he gets aggressive, he pushes people about, he moans, he whinges, he falls to the ground a lot. And it's just, you know, he's allowed to get away with it. And then he comes on TV afterwards and says that, you know, he should have got a penalty. And you can say, okay, Cahill's got his arm around him, definitely. But, you know, if you give those every week, you give him four or five penalties. And, you know, Wilf would have got one for the Cabasele challenge on him up the other end of the pitch as well. So, I mean, I think probably Watford are a better team with him in it, but it just goes to show you what their attitude is in terms of how they go about getting points, which they haven't really got many of this season. Just interested at the game, Chris, Mike, how much Deeney wound you guys up in the crowd? I'll start with you, Chris, if you can.
Oh, he always winds us up. And yeah, it was just a complete 90-minute display of shithousery from him. And as you say, you could see him talking to the ref all the time. He's a nasty physical lump. And, you know, I mean, let's not forget that, you know, this is a man who in 2012 went to prison for kicking someone in the head in the street. You know, the guy is an absolute thug. I can understand why people who are Watford supporters might enjoy having someone like that. I mean, if that's literally the best thing about your town, that's a really dark place to be. But, you know, hey ho. Yeah, we were abusing him from start to finish because, yeah, he's a shithouse.
I don't think he had the impact actually yesterday in the game that he's had in previous games against Palace, actually. But then nobody really got their teeth into it and made their mark. You're totally right on the penalty. But again, they had so little to cling to, same as us, that it probably was the talking point after the game because there's nothing else really for him to say.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, that takes us... Oh, go on, Si.
No, I was just going to say, I genuinely was watching him on Saturday. And as Mike said, he wasn't in the game. I wouldn't want him at the club either, not for all the off-the-field stuff. I genuinely don't think he's that good. And I also think he promotes... He is part of the problem with Watford only playing in a shithousery kind of way, because I think that's all he can do. And I think there's something in the fact that it's a bit like if you have Benteke from the start, you tend to hoof it along rather than play it around is the kind of the accusation. But yeah, he's awful. I wouldn't want him in the club. Genuinely, I don't think he's Prem standard, to be honest.
Definitely right. And well, certainly not anymore. I would take this opportunity now to say to producer Sam, I think you're going to have to leave all the constant references to shithousery unbleeped. Otherwise, you're going to be spending 6 or 7 hours editing this podcast. And I'm about to do it again. So we put a message out on Facebook earlier on today, the day of recording, and just asking people what they felt about the a sort of burgeoning rivalry with Watford. We've talked about the fact that, obviously, you know, being playing in the same division as Brighton on a more regular basis has really kept that one burning, and recent performances haven't been great in that. But, you know, let's talk about sort of teams in recent years that have really sort of pushed that. And, you know, the responses seem to be that Watford are the ones that are doing that. Tim Humphries said that it's not historical as such, but it did, you know, something sort of started really back at the playoff final. I know, Si, you said it was earlier on with the playoff semi as well. But, you know, that was where it started for Tim. Phil Bell has said that he obviously absolutely hates Brighton, but lately he just despises Watford and that they're more suited for rugby. Chris Chantry sort of adding to that, saying that there's shit housing and then there's Watford, and how much he would have enjoyed a late winner similar to the Bournemouth game and just how much sweeter that would have been. He also mentions that having lived there for a bit too, it feels much more personal compared to Brighton and Millwall. And obviously Millwall not being anywhere near in the same league anymore. Susan Tucker's gone the other way and said they're not worth the effort or tribute of being called a rival, and hopefully next season they'll have Luton to bother, which I think is a sentiment that I share as well. But Daniel Green, this makes me feel old, saying that Brighton was the team his dad hated, but and he'll never like them, but Watford are the team that he loathes. So incredible, really. And I think probably Jonathan Cook summing up another thought of mine, where he says, look, they're forcing this rivalry. It's not us. It's a bit like Southampton for him, going back to when Higginbottom scored in injury time and their fans were giving it outside the ground, which basically relegated us. So there you go. Lots of comment on that. Plenty more as well. Robert Sayers loathes them. Michael Curran hates Bournemouth. Dean Williams despises Bristol City. With you there, Dean. Terry Lamport was going to say Charlton, but they haven't been relevant for years. Phillips Von David, spectacular name, says Man United and Newcastle. Richard Evans has gone with Man United. So interesting range there. And it does just show you that, you know, rivalries do sort of chop and change. But I think, you know, Brighton, Millwall, and then anything you like really can go in there as well.
On a week-to-week basis, though, I think the teams that have established themselves as the sort of slightly above the relegation zone Premier League teams for the past few years are the ones that you naturally gravitate towards having an issue with. So that would be why, you know, Bournemouth is a team that tends to wind people up, because you naturally, on the seasons where you see them finish above us or you know, get points on weekends when we don't, you just think, well, how have they done it? You know, they've been in the Premier League probably less time than us. How are they spending this money on players when we're not? And I think to an extent that's happened with Watford recently as well. So it's the fact that, you know, it's been up and down as to who's doing better. It's one of the reasons why there's constant issues between the fans.
And part of that, you know, I will say this, that's kind of what you want. It adds that extra element. I love the fact that we hate Bristol City. They're miles away. It just happens to be because we have to blood to play them a lot. There was a period of time where I had an extreme hatred of Preston just because of the fact we kept playing them all the time and not really playing very well against them. So I like that element to it. You know, you always have your proper traditional rivals and you should never lose that. But, you know, you should also respond to how things happen, you know, to events and to any situation like this where, you know, Watford have a complete irrational hatred of Wilfried Zaha, who is, you know, an absolute legend at Palace and we feel very protective of. You know, in a way, that's enough to generate a proper rivalry. Unfortunately for them, they'll have to leave it once they go down. Anyway, so let's move on. Let's talk a bit more specifically about Martin Atkinson. And we've got to talk about, despite the fact that there were a couple of chances in the game to discuss, the major incident for me was the booking of Wilfried Zaha for being fouled. There's no other way of saying it. You know, he was fouled. And the referee didn't see the incident, however, has reacted by booking Wilfried Zaha. What's wrong with him? I mean, what on earth? How do you even justify that?
I mean, this is the same ref, isn't it? That without even having a second to think, booked Zaha for a dive in the Arsenal game where I was fortunately or unfortunately there from the perspective. It was instantaneous. And I'm not one for conspiracy theorists, but how can you think of anything other than him literally hating Wilf after seeing that decision of the weekend and then the previous one before? You know, he didn't give him any protection really throughout the game. And, you know, he was almost like he felt really bad every time he gave a free kick for Wilf. It's like he just didn't want to do it. It was like really painful for him. I genuinely think he literally hates him.
There has to be some sort of agenda, something personal. It really does for him to, well, I say that. You don't know what he's thinking. There's something wrong there in whatever it is. But, you know, we get stats from UREF on a weekly basis, both before and after the game that we do stick out on Twitter. And they rated him pre-game as the third worst referee in the Premier League on getting big decisions right. Mike, you know, if he was a player, he'd be benched or stuck in the the reserves or whatever, or sold to a lower league team, because, you know, his performances are absolutely terrible on a consistent basis.
Well, there's times when you must clearly know as a referee that you've made a mistake, because the crowd's not just on you in that usual way, but they're on you in a way that can tell you instantly you've made the wrong decision. And he had that plenty of times throughout the game. Genuinely annoyed with him. And I think what frustrates people more now that you've got VAR is that, you know, a decision like that is outside the remit of something that could very easily overturn it, because it's not a red. So nothing's going to get done about it. So he can safely make those yellow card decisions, knowing that nothing's ever going to happen. Maybe it'll be mentioned in the ref's report. Probably not. So he's totally above the law and he can do that kind of thing. And it's very frustrating.
Incredibly so. I mean, you make a good point there, and I'll bring you in on this, Chris, if I may. You know, when we talk about VAR and we talk about the future for it and how best to use it, is there perhaps a role it could play, potentially exposing these kind of clear refereeing errors? You know, if we're not just talking, you know, even if they're not a goal or a red card, do you, as a fan, do you advocate that, or is it just asking for trouble?
Right. This is complicated, but I'll give you, so my answer is yes, of course I advocate it, because I get so angry with so many of these wrong decisions. Do I also sympathise with the position that Nick of this parish would take, which is, oh, it's already ruining the game as it is. I've got some sympathy with the delays and so on, and the destruction of the spontaneity of celebrating certain things. But I think that justice is the most important thing in all of this. And you can see that justice wasn't served by Martin Atkinson on this occasion, and rarely is, frankly. One, the guy should be drummed out of the game. And secondly, when people aren't competent on a regular basis, they should be simply removed or suspended or whatever it is. They should also be subject to a review, and an immediate review, not something that means they get dropped to the Championship for the next game. We've already suffered that. If they've sent someone off or booked someone and it's, you know, led to suspensions later on. So yes, we need an immediate review of decisions where they're obviously wrong, like that was this weekend.
Well, for me, I don't think you even need to stop the game for something like that. I think if you've got someone sitting in a VAR studio who can look at that and go, oh my God, Martin, you've had a nightmare there, mate. Just, you know, say into his ear, oh, by the way, mate, you've booked Wilfried Zaha there. Actually, he was fouled. Don't go back and give the foul or anything. But next time there's a break in play, go and do the action of crossing off the yellow card, apologise to the player and say you saw it differently, but you've just been advised it wasn't a yellow card challenge. Deal with it in a break of play, you know, 10 seconds, whatever it takes. And then it's over and done with. And that's where, you'd start to get, you know, a positive attitude from people towards VAR, because you haven't lost any time in the game, you know, barring a natural break in play. You know, it stops people getting wound up. It stops a situation where Wilf picks up another yellow and gets sent off, and it's completely unjust and it completely affects the game. But it's already affected the game as well, because Wilf has to watch himself after that, and he can't, you know, play at full pelt, really, you know, or take it, don't make any challenge that potentially risks a yellow. So really, it does have an effect on us, and completely unjustly. So that's what I'd like to see personally.
I think your idea of doing the immediate review in the background and reporting back and getting it sorted later on in a kind of 10-second thing is absolutely the right thing. It's absolute common sense. And for that reason, it's very unlikely to find favour with the footballing authorities in this country. But I hope they listen to you. I hope, you know, I mean, if you're listening, FA, then, you know, listen to Hambo, because he's got this wrong right.
Exactly right. I think I should take charge of VAR. There we go. So, look, basically, let's talk about Atkinson as a whole, really. Do we feel that there was a consistency in his terrible refereeing? Obviously, we've all said that we feel that there was a bias against Wilfried Zaha in particular. He seemed to have an agenda, shall we say. But was he bad for both sides? Did you get that feeling in the ground, Mike?
Yes, I think he, towards the end, made some decisions that clearly upset the Watford fans. I think justifiably they were quite annoyed. So I would say for the first sort of 60 minutes, 70 minutes, He made some poor decisions for us. And then towards the end, when Watford perhaps were pushing a little bit more, the home fans definitely felt hard done by. So I think it evened out. But that's not to say that it's acceptable, because it absolutely wasn't. And I honestly don't know, you know, I always hear on Five Live or whatever, issues with referees, people keep discussing it. I don't see a way that it's going to be solved. I just don't. I could see the VAR issues being solved to an extent by, you know, referees not being part of it and it being a totally separate panel that deal with it, so that they don't back their mates up. But the majority of his poor decision making was nothing involving penalties or goals or anything like that. So don't really know what else we can do but moan.
Yeah, I think it was poor for both teams, to be honest. One thing I'd be interested in and getting the listeners' feedback on is, you know, God forbid if Zaha does ever go anywhere, would he be the same if he played for a bigger team? Because I think part of the issue is who we are as well. And I genuinely think half of the battle is who we are, and a lot of bigger clubs don't get that same level of attention from referees. They get a lot of benefit of the doubt. So I think he was pretty crap for both teams. And I also think it is sort of made way worse by who we are.
I'm not sure I buy this this narrative that you know, he's anti Zaha or anti a particular team or player. What it strikes me is that you've got a player of immense skill and immense speed that's doing things at such a speed that the referee just is not capable of understanding what's just happened. So it might look like Zaha, you know, there's an agenda against him, but I think it's genuinely lack of understanding about what's just happened in front of the referee's eyes. And that's worrying. I really don't think it's an agenda against any particular club or size of club or anything like that.
Well, I sort of understand what you're saying, but I would say, you know, take Atkinson's refereeing performance as an example. You know, where he made the error earlier in the season, booking Wilford diving, that, to me, that comes from preconceptions, and that comes from talking about a player's reputation, and whether or not that gets directly talked about in refereeing circles or not. Oh, you know, you've got to watch Zaha, or, you know, go back. It was a few years ago when Bale was playing for Spurs and was getting booked almost every week for diving, whether he was fouled or not. And unfortunately, once someone gets a reputation, it's very, very hard for human beings to kind of ignore that. And, you know, referees seem to be human beings. So I think perhaps that has an impact as well. You know, go back to when AJ was winning penalties through quick feet and anticipating challenges, shall we call it? And I think it was Steve Bruce who called it out openly in a post-match interview. And you saw a complete sea change that one week. And I think that's really the concern for me, because referees being professionals now, they have got to work incredibly hard to just referee the incidents as they see them, not to have those preconceptions, not to be influenced by big teams with big name managers, and not to be influenced by players with reputations. Just look at the incident, judge it accordingly. And I go back to the point I was making. That, to me, is where, you know, VAR can actually have a proper impact, not slow the game down. Just have someone just reviewing those things and just having a word in the referee's ear and putting a few things right here and there. And I think people will get behind that once they see those things happening. And that's what we want. That's how you make the game better. You don't make the game better by turning it into this, you know, stop-start spectacle and having, as you say, Mike, you know, people sitting in a studio who are refusing to overrule their mates or whatever, or create controversy. And I'm absolutely certain that's been a directive of VAR, is to avoid controversy as much as humanly possible. And it's funny, you see it almost week by week. The application of VAR changes depending on the incidents that have happened the previous weekend. And that cannot be how you implement something like this. It's just insanity. But there you go. It gives us something to talk about, I guess. And the last real word on that came from Pete Trainer, which is, he's gone for a bit of a conspiracy here. So he's saying it's definitely worth discussing the difference in use of VAR when it's BT or Sky versus Amazon. Almost non-existent during those mixed midweek fixtures that were televised on Amazon. And you're not going to convince me that Amazon haven't influenced that. And I have to say, before that tweet, it wasn't something that I had considered. And I don't really know how to answer it, really. I think, you know, we've talked an awful lot about VAR already. But, you know, do we feel, I suppose the angle of that we can talk about is, you know, does the media coverage actually influence how decisions are taken in terms of VAR and refereeing? And you can probably tell by my previous rant, I do think that that is the case. I do think that the reviews of matches, the comment on TV and in papers and on websites and all that kind of stuff, I think that genuinely does influence how the games are officiated. And to me, that's wrong. Any further comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go on the amount of evidence you're talking about Amazon Prime being there for precisely 1 week so far. So we'll have to see a bit more. But this is, you know, this is not a subject that is exclusive to this podcast or any Palace podcast. It's front and center of every single discussion on football. And I think perhaps we wouldn't be talking about it if there was actually been some action in the game, and there wasn't any. So there wasn't a lot else to discuss but VAR and the referee, really.
Damn right, but we've managed to do 35 minutes without really talking about the game, other than a couple of little incidents, and I think that is a victory for VAR and terrible officials everywhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But let's delve into the match itself, I guess. And we'll start, you know, looking at the lineup that Roy picked. Obviously, Gary Cahill was fit to come back into the centre of defence, replacing Mama Sacco after his red card against Bournemouth. Jeffrey Schlupp went in for Patrick Van Aanholt, who was obviously injured in that game. Rest of it was exactly as it was, with Benteke and Wickham both on the bench, along with Camarasa, with Max Meyer unwell this week and unable to take a place on the bench. So, I suppose this, to me, is the major talking point. And it came from Roy Hodgson's post-match comments. I'm really interested in your views on this, gents. So I'm going to start with massive praise for Roy Hodgson and the whole staff and squad. Three clean sheets in a row, incredibly difficult to achieve in the Premier League. It's been achieved with injuries left, right and centre at the back. It's been achieved with a really quick run of games, very little time to recover. We've managed to get 7 points out of 9 in the last 3 games, which is superb. Again, every point in the Premier League is a real tough thing to get. But this is where there's this little thing that he said when he talked about the fact straight away that this was a fatigued team and how that was a massive factor in the performance. And I would 100% agree with that. It was in my mind from almost the first minute watching the team, you know, not an awful lot of closing down, trying to conserve energy and sort of hit Watford at appropriate moments. And that was exactly the right thing to do with the team that he picked. So the question really is, could he have used his squad better to alleviate that situation? And I'll give you my views on that initially. And I think the answer is yes, with the sort of understanding that it doesn't necessarily mean that it would have been a better result if he did. I have to acknowledge that part. So I look at it and I say, you know, pick Andros Townsend, other than the injured Schlupper, who was obviously taken off at half-time, the first change late on in the game was to bring Andros Townsend off and put Benteke on. Well, Townsend probably had played fewer minutes than anybody else on the pitch of late, so it seemed a little odd for that to be the first sub, although I understood it tactically. Again, and McCarthy came on very late for Kouyaté, who looked pretty much dead on his feet for most of the game. And obviously, Ayew stayed on the pitch for 90, although he just looks knackered from minute one and continues to play at a breakneck speed, so I'm not really sure what to say about him. But he's got a bench there, so he's got, other than the players that he used, you know, I mean, McCarthy came on late. He has Camarasa there to use, and obviously he had Connor Wickham there to use. I don't think Dan coming on would have made a difference. I think that was the right call. But, you know, that midfield, he could have started McCarthy and given one of the others a break. He chose not to do that. And for me, that's the first thing that I would question. And the second thing I would question is not making a change a little bit earlier on. And maybe, you know, dare I say it, giving Camarasa a few minutes just at the end there where we were starting to push a little bit. I thought it was a bit of a shame he didn't use the squad better, considering his point about the team being fatigued.
You're quite right to make the midfield the main point of that discussion. Andros said himself before, you know, he tends to keep himself very fit. He's happily play every game going. You know, he's played 50 games in a season. So I don't think he would necessarily be the player that he'd referring to when he talks about fatigue, unless, you know, he's still not anywhere near 100% fit. Defence, you know, he mentions he was worried since the start of the season about the left and the right back being injured and not having a lot of choice there. But midfield, he has plenty of choice. And so we sort of go back to the classic Hodgson discussion that we've had over the last 2 years or so. Why does he insist on playing the same players when he has other options? It's not like we have a grueling schedule compared to some other teams. You know, Wolves are getting by, doing pretty well in the Europa League, whilst also getting the results in the Premier League. And the teams at the top, you know, obviously they have much bigger squads than we do, but they get by fine. You know, we went out of the League Cup in the first possible opportunity. So he's got options. He could have tested them out by now. So you can only assume Camarasa's days are numbered now. He's only got a few left. And he's decided not to bother with him for that reason. But again, I'm not sure whether that would have made a difference. I can't see that it ever looked like there was going to be too much in the way of goals. That game, like, it wasn't just the last on Match of the Day standard. It should have been about three games after the last game on Match of the Day, about half an hour later. So, you know, it could have gone on until now, and it still would have been 0-0.
No, absolutely right. No, it was very noticeable looking at the average positions of the team. Very, very different to sort of Bournemouth and Burnley. Obviously, Bournemouth is a bit of an aberration because we had 10 for most of the match. But really, very, very noticeable that Andros was very much deeper than Zaha on the other flank. Jordan Ayew had to do an awful lot of dropping back into midfield. It really was a quite a reserved display. Again, trying to conserve that energy. The fullbacks were both quite deep as well. So, and that, you know, again, it was just reflected in the performance itself, where we looked pretty solid. It looked very difficult for Watford to break us down, but we just didn't seem to have that energy, that verve, that little bit extra to sort of go on the attack on a regular basis.
I think I've come to terms with the fact that Roy has got a group of players that he trusts and relies on, and we talk about a lot on this on our pod, that actually he has his favourites. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think McCarthy is definitely one of those, so it was a surprise to see him not brought in. But I think Mike's right. I think that was always going to be a draw, that game, regardless of who he plays. But I don't think we're ever going to see the level of rotation you see at other clubs, or the use of subs you see at other clubs. I just think it's a thing about Roy, and I think I've come to terms with it. But still, a point was a great result on the day.
Absolutely right. And there are always pros and cons to every approach. We've seen over the last few weeks that very much the pros in terms of Roy's approach. And you can totally understand him wanting to keep that group that's playing so well on the pitch together. And if you think about the last two matches, they've excelled when attacking. They've actually put pressure on the opposition to relieve pressure on our defence. And, you know, again, if we're just talking about fatigue being the factor that stopped that, and you know, he obviously doesn't have that same trust in the other options available to him, just especially in that midfield, then you can't really have a go at him for doing that, I guess, even though I have most weeks this season. But again, like you, Si, perhaps I'm coming to terms with it a bit here.
I think it absolutely is the methodology of Roy is to select the same players consistently. And I was listening to what you were saying, Chris, and just thinking, you know, surely there must have been some other options. And I thought, well, I'll just have a quick look at the 25-man squad. And actually, there really isn't. Once you take account of the injuries and the people who are out on loan and the fact that you've got a couple of youth players like Sam Woods who, you know, are clearly on the fringes, there's really not anyone who, you know, there's three goalkeepers in the squad for a start. Looking lower down, most of the defenders are either injured or played in this game. With the midfield, the only ones who didn't were Camarasa and McCarthy. We've already talked about McCarthy at length, and I think probably we all agree that he should have started this game if Kouyaté was as knackered as it seemed he was. And Riedewald came on and did a good job. In this case, Camarasa's clearly not flavour of the month. Other than that, again, of the people who didn't start the game, actually, you've then got Sorloth, who's out on loan. You've got Benteke, who did come on, and Wickham. So, you know, Roy really doesn't have that depth of squad. I'm quite surprised at the lack of depth. And I think clearly we need to sign some people, frankly. That's the takeaway from this.
Well, yeah, I get where you're coming from. And I think it's dangerous to get into that mindset, though. And it's something that I've challenged throughout the course of this season and continue to do so. Because, you know, it's very easy to say, well, he doesn't trust Camarasa, so he can't use him. He can use him. And there's plenty of other clubs where, in the event of an injury crisis or even, you know, a couple of injuries here and there in similar positions, that, you know, a youngster will get chucked on the bench just in case, or, you know, maybe given 5-10 minutes at the end of the game. Now, I'm not saying 100%. Let's take an example. Someone like Naya Kirby, you can play central. You know, if you're not going to use Camarasa, maybe you'll use him. I don't know. But, you know, I'm not saying that he would come on for 10 minutes, impact the game and make a huge difference and we'd go away with 3 points here. I'm not saying that. But I think where people, myself included, do get a little bit, you know, frustrated is that we never try that. It's very much a risk-free. And, you know, we're talking about it as a negative. It's not, I don't really see it as a negative at the moment. We're performing very, very well. The actual standard of football has gone up other than this particular game. I think we're enjoying things a bit more than we were. There doesn't seem to be any need to sort of labour this point too much. But I think we are just seeing that we played the bottom side. Now, whatever you think about the circumstances of them changing manager and having the new manager in the, you know, at the sidelines, the players obviously were going to be up for it from minute one. But there was I still feel that there was an opportunity there to just do something a little different. But of course, Roy knows better than anyone that doing something a little different it's all risk versus reward, and the risk might be higher than the reward at the end of it. And he doesn't take those chances. That's why we picked up a point. And arguably it could have been zero as much as it could have been three. So I think we'll probably leave that there, but I think good debate. And I think it's something that we'll undoubtedly return to. Now, Chris, you mentioned Riedewald coming on for Schlupp at half time. I've seen some wildly different views on how he did. How did it seem to you? At the game?
Well, obviously, I was mystified and gutted to see King Jeff come off. But on a serious note, I mean, I thought he was fine. I mean, it's not a remarkable performance by any means, but he was solid. He didn't look like he was going to make a mistake. He looked confident. I think maybe, you know, it reflects the point that exactly what you were just saying, actually, about playing, you know, young players. And I think Riedewald kind of is that equivalent for Roy of someone who he's been reluctant to use in the past. And, you know, his passing looked solid. He didn't make any obvious mistakes, in my view. I was quite happy with his performance. I'd still like to see him get some more game time, preferably in a game that didn't count too much, maybe in the late stages, and see if he can build to actually being a regular performer for us, because he'd give us some extra energy that, you know, you can't maintain that level of performance if with players of the age we've got and playing the number of minutes that they do. Players like McCarthy, who looks knackered all... I mean MacArthur, sorry. MacArthur looks knackered all the time, and I know that's the way he runs, but even so, he does perform like a beast, and we need to provide some cover for him so that he can rest occasionally.
I've wanted Riedewald involved for a long time, and when he came on, I was A, surprised, but B, I kept a very close eye on him because I really want him to do well. And I was very excited when we signed him and been very frustrated for him. I'm sure he's earned a load of money while he's been waiting on the bench, but still. Chris is right, he didn't really do much wrong, but at the same time, his positioning was, at times, was poor, and he let some balls go. You know, there's one particular point where he really, really should have gone up for a ball and he didn't. And those are the kind of things that are just not going to get Hodgson on your side. You know, he's not going to get much of a chance to impress him. And I'd be surprised if Hodgson was impressed, because those are the kind of things that he would just spot straight away and he would not be happy with.
It was made on a point on Twitter that he's actually only 23 still. So I think people are saying for Roy, he is a youth player and he's still got a lot of development to go. And he seemed pretty flattering about him on the post-match review. So perhaps there is maybe a future for him in the next few games with Jeff potentially being out and Van Aanholt. But I think Mike's right. If there was an offer made for him in the transfer market that he would accept, and we would definitely accept him, I think he'd be off.
Yeah, maybe. Although he did talk after the game about being happy at Palace and enjoying the fact he's got more of an opportunity of late to be in and around the match squad, and particularly obviously getting a few minutes in this game, which I thought was interesting to hear. And I also thought that, you know, playing left back, which he has done in the past, but just not really at the Premier League. So, and it's a lot faster. And I think the thing that stuck out for me is that whilst he's a really strong player technically, and you can see how calm he is when he has the ball, and I actually really like that. I think that's a real positive, but it also highlights that, you know, accentuates the negative part of his game, which is that he's a bit slow paced. He's a bit, you know, you don't tend to see him sprint. He tends to kind of glide around the pitch a little bit. And whilst that's great because he's confident on the ball when he doesn't feel rushed and he tries to take decisions at the appropriate time, unfortunately, it also means that, you know, when you've got a player, I mean, you know, like Ismail Sarr, who was running up against him for quite a lot of that, who is running at full pelt, it really does expose him. And you know, he's not, as Mike has picked up and Chris has picked up, he wasn't appropriately positioned to play at that pace against that opponent. So definitely an area of weakness is how much he moves about and how quickly he moves about. But there's obviously roles within the team where that would be less of an issue. And he's, I say, there's something there definitely in terms of a player. Whether we'll see it at our club, I'm not so sure.
There was a couple of comments in from Twitter about the situation with Riedewald coming on and Schlupp being injured. Mr. Cadbury's Parrot is obviously a fixture of many a Palace pod. I was surprised to see Gyro come out and say how happy he is at the club. That seems odd with his lack of games. He's only 23. Maybe we're going to see more of him. What do you think? Well, I think the answer to what we just said there is we have absolutely no idea, probably no more than you. So probably no help to you there, Mr. Parrot. And Charles Meyer, I hope Schlupp will be back immediately, but it's great to see Gyro get a shot. He looked very good passing the ball out of the back and seemed very composed. So exactly the same as what Hambo said. He also looked pretty fit to me. What are your thoughts on him? I mean, I'm sure he's kept himself fit, and he's definitely he's gone down the Joshua route of thinning down a little bit and getting muscly. But again, I just don't think that's something Hodgson really gives a toss about. So it'd be interesting. You know, you're absolutely right in that he can play left back, and there might not be any choice but to play him. So.
Well, that's exactly right. It's spot on the last point I was going to make, which is, you know, PVA is probably unlikely to be back for the Brighton game if that is a hamstring injury. And it does seem that the scan showed up an injury, although how bad, I don't know. But similarly, I don't know what the issue is with Jeffrey Schlupp. I haven't seen anything about that. There might have been something out there. Apologies if I missed it. But, you know, if he's not fit to play against Brighton, then Gyro's going to play there. And, well, it's an opportunity for him as much as it might be a concern for us. I really just hope he takes that opportunity with both hands, because, like I say, I think there's a good player in there somewhere. If he could just sort of wind that energy up a little bit, I think there's a chance that he might win Roy Round and get a few more games. Anyway, so thanks for those comments. Lastly, to really talk about in terms of the match itself, we did create only two real chances of note. There was another shot we created that was just blocked, but the two major chances that we have, so first half fell to James McArthur at the far side of the box following a ball in. Honestly, has to do better a bit there, but you know, perhaps those tired legs were a factor, because didn't quite get his foot up high enough to get over the ball and sort of side-footed it quite badly wide from a very good position. Obviously, that goes in and we're probably coast to victory after that, because the game might well open up with Watford having to get forward. We'd probably pick them off with another one, I would have said, because their quality is pretty low. But it didn't go in. And similarly, in the second half, there was a fantastic piece of skill by Ayew on the right-hand side of the box. And it's just the shot at the end was a little bit wild. And I think he had his head in his hands for about 15 minutes. He was that disappointed. So he obviously saw it as a really big chance.
Jesus H. Christ. If those are the comment, those are the chances that we have to chat about on the pod, I mean, that just speaks volumes, doesn't it? £30 it cost to go and watch that game. £30.
Yeah, and that really genuinely was it in terms of us going forward. And, you know, again, look at the statistics. Watford, although didn't really seem that dangerous, created, you know, far more than we did. But there we go. I think probably the last thing of note was a fantastic save at the death by Bethente Guaita once more. Just so alive right at the last minute. Not had a huge amount to actually do, and then to pull that one out. It was Spironi-esque as well, that sort of getting down low and knocking the ball away. Just absolutely love to see it. And, it, you know, the two great men were pictured this week. The picture went around Twitter of Jules and Bethente Guaita together, which was fitting.
I just want to comment on your brilliant use and pronunciation to say Vicente the way you did. I'm currently learning Italian, and I tell you what, you'd walk into a Spanish lesson like that, Cambo, that was excellent.
I have practiced, mate. I have to stop myself saying Vicente, because it's beer, isn't it? You know, there was a video when he signed that the club put out where they sort of phonetically spelled it out, and it was Vicente Guaita.
Quality.
But I will undoubtedly say it differently almost every time I say it. But hopefully we all learn how to say it properly, because he deserves it. He's fast becoming a legend at Palace. So let's talk, as much as it was a terrible match, can we possibly select a man of the match? Who do we think was best? And I'm going to put you under pressure immediately, Si, back at you, just to try and surprise you. Who was your man of the match?
Gary Cahill. I thought some of those challenges towards the end were excellent. He is just so calm, cool and collective, and what he lacks in pace, he makes up for in sort of positional sense and calm. I thought he was excellent.
Well, there we go. Mike?
It is hard to argue with that, and another clean sheet three in a row. You know, you probably would have to give it to the defenders. I thought Zaha did his best in difficult circumstances. And Ayew ran his socks off, but I don't think they quite connected. I'd have given it to one of those two, but having heard Si just say that, you can't really argue with Cahill, can you?
Absolutely not. Or can you? Chris, who did you think?
Well, I'd have gone for Cahill or Guaita. I've now got that correct. In terms of pronunciation, I've been saying Guaita for several months, so thanks for the lesson there. I thought Guaita had a great game. And, I mean, that's pretty damning in itself, considering, you know, where Watford are in the league and how they've been doing. Clearly, the rest of the team did a good job. You know, didn't concede any goals, which is great, but also created nothing, and that was pretty thin gruel and a depressing watch. And like Mike, I do slightly resent having spent £30 and travelled the long journey that we did, including the bitter walk through Watford itself, which, you know, no one should have to go through ever.
No, you feel like you have to have done something wrong to be made to do that, don't you? And you know, maybe you can point to an event in your recent history that means you did deserve that, who knows? But I'm not going to speculate any further than that. I think Cahill was probably the right choice. I thought Kelly did quite well as well. Mike's mentioned Wilf. I thought he battled tremendously in the face of a tremendous amount of adversity. I think, again, midfield was a little bit lacklustre. Not too bad in possession, but generally speaking, didn't really impact the game like you'd kind of want them to. And probably, yeah, just a word for Ayew and how hard he worked again. And, you know, guy must be knackered with the amount of work that he's put in over the last few weeks in particular. But yeah, no one really sort of screaming out in terms of their putting in a magnificent performance. But a point is a point. It's obviously, as I say, very, very difficult to pick up points. If you look at where we are now. I think someone put a comparison up either in our chat. I think it was in our chat. Patrick was putting it up. We were, was it 10 points less we had this time last season? I think it was.
Yeah, anyway. 12 points after 16 games last season.
So there you go.
But what I would say is that most of the other sides have got more points than they did last season. There was a hoovering up effect last season from the top sides. That's not happened this season. So it's a bit more complicated than that, I think.
No, that's a really good point. And that is a little bit of a warning sign in dropping too many points in good situations. Yes, you know, you can. I think Roy very much looks at the averaging over a point a game. He mentioned it after the Bournemouth game, saying, you know, whatever happens in the next four games, we'll have over 20 points at Christmas, which he'll be delighted with. And understandably, I get that. But perhaps at the very least, you think the third side to get, you know, the third bottom side may end up with quite a high number of points this year. And obviously, you don't want that to be us. Doesn't feel like we're in danger of that at the moment, but it is very, very tight when you look at that table. Okay, so just before we end, last little bit of listener contact. Mark Drew got in touch, but he's pointing out again that we are desperate because we all know that there's a huge need to get a striker in. Still linked with various people in the press and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I was looking at a few conversations on Twitter. I think people really are settling on the fact that at the very least in January, if we could get, you know, we need a full back each side, you know, right back and a left back, and we definitely need a forward in. You know, let's see how that goes. That would probably put us in fairly good stead to kick on a little bit. The latest striker linked, Fabio Barini, on loan from AC Milan, and he's a name that does keep cropping up every window without fail. So I think he's probably one on the list. Let's you know, suggest that's the case, unless it's an agent potentially working us. But did okay. Didn't start at Liverpool, I think, and then played for Sunderland as well as a couple of others. But has Premier League experience, decent enough player. But whether or not he's that exciting forward who's going to lead the line and do all the things that he needs to do in this particular side, not so sure myself. Anyway, I think we'll probably leave that one there. We've done an hour somehow. No idea how we did that. Hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, check out the Love Sports Show. That's Tuesday. Is it 8 or 9? I've got confused. Yeah, Tuesday, 8 till 9 p.m. And obviously, a podcast will be out shortly afterwards. And then, Mike, you're doing the preview again this week?
I think Terence is back. I might be wrong.
Oh, well, I mean, he did a cracking job last time out. So, but, you know, if he's happy and his work on his house is complete, then it'd be good to welcome him back as well, I guess. But do check that one out. Should be out, I guess, probably Thursday evening, with any luck. And, of course, we'll speak to you. Well, obviously, the show, review show, will be coming after the Brighton game. Don't know exactly when we'll be doing that. Obviously, we'll all be there on the Monday night. So going to be a tricky one to fit that in, but we'll figure it out and we'll speak to you then. Thank you very much. Cheers. Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.